Okay, chapter 3, Perek Gimel in Eicha, the middle chapter of the five chapters in the Megillah, page 22 in the Art Scroll Chamish Megillot series. This is the longest of the of all the chapters in Megillat Eicha. As in the introductory shiu, we discussed that every perek has 22 psukim, except for the middle perek, which has 66. Yet, as you'll go through it, you'll see that the psukim are shorter than the other psukim in the rest of the sefer. And that's going to be by design. There's a reason why the Mikonen writes the psukim this way, or the Navi writes the psukim this way. And it really is going to be a major turning point towards the middle of the perek, where we're going to perhaps see a different light, how the Mikonen moves away from the first two chapters of either Yerushalayim speaking of her pain and suffering, or the Mikonen, in this case Yirmiyahu, speaks of what he has witnessed about the city and about the other nations' attitude towards the city of Yerushalayim, and began to discuss a little bit of God and God's role in all of this. Perek Gimel is completely different than the rest of the chapters, and you'll notice a lot of differences. So besides with the psukim of 22 verses 66, you'll realize that if we're going to use the acrostic method, so here it's in threes. How you have Aleph, 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 Bet, 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 Gimel, 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 so on and so forth. You'll find a very similar method of the acrostic in which other chapter in Tanakh of multiples. Tehillim, Kuf Yutet, 119, 7. You'll find that they're multiples of 7. And here you'll find them to be as multiple of 3s. The also major difference is what's the first word in Perek Gimel, what's the first word in Perek Aleph and Bet, which is also going to be the first word in Perek Daled. Echa, right? Echa. Echa is the first word in Perek Aleph, Bet, and Dalet. It's not in Perek He, as I've, in the introductory shiur, we discussed that Perek He is really a very different style than the rest of the Sefer. It's a different message than the rest of the Sefer. You don't find the word Echa. Instead, what do you find? The word Ani. Ani. So Ani is first person. Up until now, there was no first person. And perhaps the Yerushalayim, the city, or the walls of Yerushalayim would speak. But this is the first time that you find human being speaking about what he has witnessed. And the question really that we're going to have is, who is this Ani HaGever? Who is this I am the man? Who is this man who is speaking? We'll discuss that as well. And perhaps one of the other major differences is that the central theme of this perek is going to be about suffering and grappling with God in one's faith. So up until now, questions of faith and questions of God came up once or twice, and a little bit here and a little bit there. But this is like the theme, and definitely the beginning of the Sefer, a major, major theme of why one suffers. And you'll see this is very similar to that of Iyov. And we haven't studied Iyov before. For anyone who has read through Iyov, you'll find similar language, similar Lashon, as to what we're going to read in Perek Gimel. And you'll find that there are about 3 sections in this chapter, and we'll go through it. 66 psukim, it's a lot. I'm not going to go translate every single word. It's not enough time for that. And I'm not going to explain every single pasuk, but we're going to try to highlight some of the major ideas, at least within every 3 psukim. So then that way we'll be able to have a fuller understanding in this perek and this chapter. Okay, let's start with pasuk Aleph. Ani Agever Ra'a Oni, I'm the man who has seen affliction, Beshevet Evrato, by the rod of his anger. Okay, Ani Agever, I am the man. So who is the man? Who would you guess is speaking now? Yirmiyahu. Why would you guess it's Yirmiyahu? Because he wrote it, right? Yirmiyahu wrote the book. And if he wrote the book, you would assume that someone says, I, then it's the author of the book. It's the one who wrote it. And that would make sense that Geva would be Yirmiyahu, and that's Rashi's approach. And if I were, again, moving away without going and trying to understand methodology of Mefarshim have their own methodology. And if I were to ask someone who studies Tanakh and Rishonim, and I would say that it's probably Yirmiyahu, who do you think would have that Perush? They would say it's Rashi, because that's Rashi's approach in all of Tanakh. That when there is an unknown character, you give it a name. Who's the name? The known characters that we know or we heard of or we read about before. And this is the method really in all of Tanakh. Isha HaKushit, Moshe Rabbeinu married the Isha HaKushit, and you had Aaron and Miriam speaking about the Isha HaKushit. Who is the Isha HaKushit? Rashi says it's Tzipora. How did you know that? Well, it makes sense. Who did Moshe marry? Well, we know he married at least one woman, and we have her name, so we might as well take her name, we'll put it into the unknown, and it is Tzipora. Who are Shifra and Pua? The two women who were tasked by Paro to throw the male babies in the river. Who was Shifra and Pua according to Rashi? Yocheved and Miriam. How did you know that? Well, we have two other women who we've just read about, Yocheved and Miriam. And it makes sense, perhaps, within the story, and if you go through the storyline, you'll see that maybe it's those two women. Why are they called Shifra and Pua? Okay, Rashi gives his reasons for it. Why is she called Isha Kushit? Rashi gives his reason for it. And he'll do the same almost everywhere. So here, it makes sense. Yirmiyahu. How do you know it's Yirmiyahu? Even though we haven't read Yirmiyahu's name, but if you know the tradition that Yirmiyahu wrote Sefer Echa, so it makes sense that the author would be the one to write it. But also, besides for that, you'll see that in Sefer Yirmiyahu, Yirmiyahu speaks a lot of the suffering that he went through while all of this was happening, and prior to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and during the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. So he's speaking about himself, like the suffering that he's going through himself. And what's the suffering that he has? God, I'm the only prophet who witnessed the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. I mean, all the other prophets prophesied the destruction. And they all got up on the soapbox and they screamed and yelled. And okay, but they never actually lived through it. They never saw it. They had a good life. They probably had a nice house, a good salary from the government. It is what it is. They said what they had to say, but they lived their life and they didn't feel the pain that I'm going through. I got up on the soapbox screaming and yelling. They jailed me. They threw me. They beat me. And then on top of that, I actually witnessed that which I visioned with the vision that I had, the prophecy that I had. What suffering, what pain. It's like the worst nightmare. You have a nightmare and you wake up from it and you realize, pinch, pinch. Oh my gosh, this is not a nightmare, this is reality. And that's what Yirmiyahu is living. He's living through the reality of a nightmare. And he says, God, how can you do this to me? Like, me? Like, why did I deserve for all of this to happen? So that's perhaps Rashi's approach. Who else would you think? Forget it. Not Yirmiyahu. Who else would you think is the Gever? It can't be Hashem because the Gever is going to speak out against Hashem. So it's not a dialogue of God with himself. But you're getting somewhere. A non-human, perhaps Yerushalayim. Again, that's the other, I don't say character, but the other theme of Yerushalayim, the walls speaking. But then there's a third person. B'nai Yisrael, or I would say not just B'nai Yisrael, a specific person amongst B'nai Yisrael. Meaning somebody suffering, somebody watching the destruction suffering, and this is his chance to express his feelings and express his suffering. And what Yirmiyahu, the author, does is he takes what he hears of somebody expressing their suffering and writes it down to make it real. Like, it's not some theoretical idea of walls talking or the Mekonen speaking of what he witnessed. Somebody who's actually going through the suffering, who unfortunately ate their child, who got beaten up, who was bloody, who saw their family members exiled or killed or home destroyed in the Beit HaMikdash destroyed. It's not a theory. This is literally, again, somebody living through the nightmare, but not Yirmiyahu, somebody else. And that's going to be an important idea as well, because what happens now is we're moving away from the general theme of destruction to something more personal. That this is somebody who, when you're reading, you'd be like, wow, you know what? And we're going to go through this psukim. I actually go through this too. Like, I suffer sometimes, and I question my relationship with God, and I question why does God do this, and why me, and all the other questions that people might have. Because, so it's not just the walls screaming and crying, or there was a destruction of a city. Okay, what does it mean, destruction of a city? Or that somebody else saw a destruction from afar, like Josephus writing history from on top of a mountain. This is somebody who's living through and suffering, and you're reading this and saying, I understand, not even empathize. I know it. I've lived through this. Perhaps not the same way that this person has lived through it, but I lived through suffering, and I have the same questions, perhaps the same accusations, and I want to know also, as the author of this perek, what is my relationship with God? And so this is to make it real. And this is, I think, why in the middle of the entire Sefer, because many times in Tanakh, you'll find that the author of either the Sefer, you find this a lot in Tehillim, there's the buildup, there's the apex, and then you got to come back down from the top of the mountain. Tefillah is like that also. There's the buildup, there's the brachot, psukei dezimrash, kriyat shema, the apex is that of Shemoneh Esrei, but then there's also, you got to move back now, slowly. How do you climb down? You have Tachnun, and you have the other parts of Tefillah, and then you have Aleinu, and when you go through the Sidul, you'll actually see the parallels of the Tefillot on the extreme parts of the Sidul, until you get to the middle, all the way to the top, which is that of Shemoneh Esrei, perhaps for a different shiur on the Sidul, but the structure is there for a reason, which is why we should try not to skip parts. And which is why, you know, we should say all of Korbanot and not skip the Korban, because it's part of that structure. There's something very important about that piece. Okay, so he says, Oti na'ag vayolech choshech v'lo'o. Okay, he has led me and driven me into the darkness and not light. Ach b'yashuv yafoch yado kol hayom. And against me, he turns his hands all day long. Meaning, God always seems to be angry at me, and he picked me to let out all of his anger. Now, there is a certain word that you're not going to find, or you haven't found yet, the first three psukim. I want to go through the next 3 to 6 psukim, and you'll tell me one word that you don't find here. Or at least a few words, but at least one main word, and then one main theme. Pasuk bet, dalet. Bila b'sari v'ori shibar atzmotai. Okay, he has worn away my flesh and skin. Shibar atzmotai, broke my bones. Like he's beating me. So and God's anger is there, beating and beating relentlessly without any mercy, just afflicting more and more and more. Bana alai v'yikaf rosh ut la'ab. And he besieged me, encircled me with bitterness and travail. B'machashakim oshivani kimetei olam. He placed me in darkness like the eternally dead. It's dark. Someone like puts me in a dark room, like the mafia, and just beating me and beating me and beating me. And what he does here, or at least what you don't see so far, is a responsibility, a reason for why he thinks maybe this is why God brought this upon me. Someone who suffers, hopefully, besides for asking God, why me, the question is, why? Like, why? What is it? Besides for me, but what is it? What is it that maybe I might have done to deserve this punishment? Now, this question is a very dangerous question, because a lot of times we begin to ask the question for other people, and we begin to answer those questions for other people. It's like you hear this, Batya told me that her cousin, Lo Aleinu, had lost a child, at I think 1.5 or 2, choked on a grape. He choked on a grape, sitting Shiva. Some rabbi comes, and he comes and he says, you want to know why this happened? You want to know why this happened? Because the Gemara says, I'm sorry, I say this, I shake when I even think that somebody would ever say such a shivas. The Gemara says that parents shouldn't see the suffering of their children, or that parents shouldn't suffer for their children. And this child would have been a rasha. You would have been suffering your entire life. And that is why, so it's a bracha. It's a bracha. She kicked him out of the house, and wrote an article to the Jewish press. Wrote an article to the Jewish press about this, that like insensitivity. And you want to say it to yourself. You want to you want to speak of yourself in your own life, and you want to give answers to your own life and to what happens in your life. Okay, it's between you and God. You might believe that to be true. Okay, so you think to yourself and you keep it to yourself. The moment you begin to give answers for other people. Who are we? Who are we to think that? So this is a very dangerous question here. The question of, that why is God beating me? Why me? Why me? Why me? We don't know why something bad happens to someone. But the Gemara does say that something does happen to someone. The question is okay, what is it? What is it that perhaps God would want from us personally? How are we to reconnect to God? What are we supposed to learn from this? Not even that, but what can I do positive from this? And you see a lot of this with people who go through addictions. A lot of them become social workers. They find ways to be big brothers because they went through the suffering themselves. And the question that they come out from this is not anymore of why was it me? Why does this happen to me? Why am I the only one around my friends and family members who goes through this? But how can I take my experiences and help somebody else? And here the question really is going to be, and right now he's asking why. The question and the answer he's going to get at the end is, okay, now what am I supposed to do? Which is eventually really the response that we're supposed to have. What am I supposed to do right now? And so here he's again speaking of his relationship with God, and that this is being done to me always and always and always. Hey, vi bichliotai pasuk ten. Kam ki azak v'ashaveh satan tefilati. Even when I scream and I yell and I pray, I'm sorry, pasuk zayin. I skipped the pasuk. Gadar ba'adi v'lo etzeich bi nechishati. Okay, gadar ba'adi. Put a geder, a wall or fence, so I cannot escape. He has weighed down my chain. Yeah, perhaps the person who is in exile, who's being taken out of exile, the person who's watching his family being taken out to exile, Yirmiyahu also was chained, he was jailed and chained. Perhaps, again, Yirmiyahu was speaking of his suffering, of what he got through, and he couldn't escape. He felt like he was in one area and one space. But again, any way that you look at it, if this person is suffering and feels trapped, feel suffocated. And again, many times in our lives, we feel trapped, we feel suffocated. We wonder and we're trying to figure out what is this all about. And now, what is he doing? Pasuk Chet, Gam ki ezak v'ashavea satan tefilati. He gets personal. Even when I scream and yell and I pray, he shuts out my prayer. He shuts out my prayer. Gadal derechai begazit nitivotai. Even though my roads were walled up, he distorted my paths. He wouldn't allow me to walk down that path. What's the one word he's missing here? Hashem. Like, he can't go like head on with this. Right? He's not saying God. He did something wrong to me. He was the one who did it wrong. I mean, if you're going to be angry, you go head on. The name, God, how can you do such a thing? God, what is this all about? God, you hit me and you beat me in a dark room. God, you locked me up. Even when I pray to you, God, you wouldn't allow me to pray. You shut my lips. You don't find any of that. Perhaps because either right now what happens is that the mikonen feels uncomfortable. On the one hand, he knows that he's suffering, so he's screaming out. But on the other hand, he's not sure if he wants to invoke the name of God. And you can see this in two ways. Either one way is that because he has the respect still for God, and he knows eventually in the back of his mind, God is involved, or he wants to distance himself more and more. Because every time you mention the word God, that means you believe in God. Right? The funniest thing, I met a few atheists, and the funniest thing is when I speak to them, I say, how are you doing? Thank God. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. I'm like, seriously, like, it's a saying. I don't actually mean it. It's just like a saying that you say in the streets when somebody, it's like, you know, when you're walking by and you're in ShopRite, someone says, hey, and like, immediately you respond, hey, how are you? Like, you're not even looking at the person. It's like, hey, it's like automatic, how are you? What's going on? Thank God. It's like, here, you might not want to even say it. I don't want to say God's name because I want to distance myself from God. I'm suffering and I'm in pain and I'm screaming out, but I'm not mentioning the thing that this did to me, that he did this to me. He's feeling guilty. Right. So we're going to see he's going to get pulled back into it. Because eventually, when he mentions God's name, you'll see a completely different personality. Almost like he's bipolar. And God forbid, that's not what I mean, but you'll see the personality and the change in the way he understands this. Yes?
Some sort of commentaries on the bottom say that this is singular, you've done it by yourself, that's all thank you. But without the minion, maybe more effective.
Because he's only speaking of himself?
He's crying out by himself.
By himself, oh, okay.
So then he's being scrutinized by God. Are you worthy of that? Even you're growing with the healer, the group, then that's just grabbing for the moment.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's a nice answer to what it does, though, is when you're praying with the group, is that everyone is imo anochi betzara, everyone is together in a person's suffering, as opposed to when you're by yourself. So then you feel all alone, and you feel like there's nobody else there who understands you. That's why the minyan is so important. It's collective. It's bringing everyone together. Yeah. Okay. So now let's continue. Pasuk yud. Dov orev huli. Okay. So he's like a bear to me. Ari b'mistarim, a lion who's hiding. Drachai sorer v'yfesheni v'simani shomem. He has strewn my path with thorns and made me tread carefully. He made me desolate. Darach kashto v'yatzivan iveni kamatara lachis. We've seen this before. He bent his bow, right, as I was a target for his arrow. We saw that image before. As the target happened to be that he had needed to find the target. I am that target that he has found. And here you now begin to see who does he compare? Again, assuming he's talking about God, who does he compare God to? Or to what does he compare God to? A dove, an ari, an animal, a lion, a bear. To a point where it seems like what he's doing is the suffering is for no reason. It's illogical. Just like a bear logically just comes after me. Doesn't want to come and it just sees me and it wants to devour me. A lion sees me and it wants to devour me. It's not because a lion was sitting there wondering, can't wait for that black-haired bald guy to come by me. Black-haired bald is an oxymoron, but I try to give more credit to myself. The bald guy who's coming right now and walking by, okay, and he's walking by, that's my target. No, because you're walking by and it needs a target and you're there. It's not because it's thinking about it under the trees trying to figure out who's going to be the next target. God, he's saying, is the same thing. God, you're like an animal, chas v'shalom. And that, all right, you like had to pick and choose someone and you picked and chose me. Why is it me? Hey, pasuk yud gimem. Hevi. So he shot into my innards, the arrows. Hayiti sochok l'kol amin, I was a laughing stock to all of my people. Neginatam kol hayom, I was their object for mocking. Hisbiani b'mromim, hirvani la'anai, filled me with bitterness and satiated me with wormwood. Vaygares bechatzar shinai, and he ground my teeth in gravel. Hichbishani ba'efer, and he made me cower in ashes. Vatiznach mishalom nafshi. Nashiti tova, my soul despaired of having peace. I have forgotten goodness. I was getting into his soul a little bit. It's a little therapy for you. He's getting into his soul. My soul despaired of having peace, meaning my soul wants peace. It wants the feeling of peace. It wants the feeling of knowing that I will have inner peace, of not feeling the suffering and battling and grappling the suffering. And all of this is so, but I have forgotten goodness. I don't know what it means. I don't even know what good is. Life is so bad. I don't even know what good tastes like any longer. Va'omar ava nitzchi. And I said, loss is my strength. And v'tochalti me'Hashem. And my expectations from Hashem. He now uses the name of God. And what does he say? He's lost. Lost is my strength and my expectations from Hashem. I expected more from Hashem. I needed more. I needed Him, and I expected more, and I didn't get it. The first time you see the mention of Hashem, and now things are beginning to change. The moment that he connects to the higher being, the greater being, it's like the 12 steps. You know, you got to connect to a higher, something higher than you, greater than you. He's connecting to God now. He finally realized, God, perhaps it's because it's coming from you. Now if there's a God and I'm connecting myself to God, then God, I want you to remember my afflictions, and the wormwood and the bitterness. God, remember me. Remember me. Where else do we see the lashon of remembering? That when God saves the Jewish people, he remembers at Nakatam, he remembers the screaming and their crying. God remembers, perhaps a different lashon, huh? Sarah, exactly. God remembers Sarah. Okay? Remember, when God remembers people, remembers them, then he takes them out of their suffering. God, remember me. Wait, hello, I'm here. What about me? Perhaps you've forgotten me. And now remembering, now, what does he do? It's like almost like the complete opposite message that he was giving at first. At first he was saying, God, like, you chose me, because you were angry. So if God is going to choose him, of all the billions of people in the world, or then probably millions of people in the world, to lay all of his anger, it must be because you are actually somebody that he doesn't know who you are, and it's not random. What is he saying now? Remember me, but you've remembered me up until now for the pain and the suffering and all the punishments. No, no, remember me for good. Remember me for that. Zachor tizkor, double lashon. Like, really, God, really remember. V'tashoach alai nafshi, so therefore I will still hope. God, I want to hope. I want good. I want to be happy. I want all of this. But the only way I can do this is if you allow for this to happen. So now he begins to perhaps now want to strengthen that relationship with Hashem. God's kindness surely has not ended. Wow, look at this, God's kindness. All of a sudden he's speaking of God's kindness. God, your kindness surely has not ended. Your mercies have not are not exhausted. They're new every morning. Every morning, Modeh Ani Lefanecha, Melechai VeKayam, right? Shechazal Tobi Nishmati BeChamla Rabbah Emunatecha. God, look at this, Rabbah Emunatecha. Every morning, great is your faithfulness. Chalki Hashem, Ameran Nafshi. Hashem is my portion. Whoa! What happened? What just happened here? Speak of God as my portion. This is like beautiful. It's like this is something you would mention at a simcha. You know, Mazel Tov, Hodu Lashem, Kito Kinlocha, Chelki Hashem. God is my portion. Rabbi Munatecha. It's like for a happy occasion. It's not this. And you beat me till I bleed in the dark room, and you've taken away any chance of prayer. You wouldn't say something like that in a simcha. That's something you would say, God forbid, when a person's all alone in despair. So therefore I have hope in him. Hope. That is the key word. The hope. The tikvah. With hope, eventually somebody realizes there's light at the end of the tunnel. That there is something to hope for. Hope allows one to connect and attach to something. Hope allows one to continue to dream, but not to have nightmares, but to dream of paradise, to dream of good things, of exciting things. Because there's hope, there's something to dream about and to attach to, and that's God. I will attach myself to God. Tov Hashem lekovav. Hashem is good to those who trust Him. So therefore, I must, if I trust Him, then things will be good. The nefesh tidreshenu, to the soul that seeks Him. Tov yachlu vidumam l'tshuvat Hashem. It is good to hope silently for Hashem's salvation. Tov lagever, ki yisa ol binorav. It's good for a man that he bear a yoke in the youth. We use the word ani hagever in the beginning of the perek, where the gever was supposed to be perhaps a lashon that was not used for ish. Not man, not enosh, not Adam. What does gever mean? So in Hebrew, modern Hebrew, gever means tough guy, right? Tough guy. So it could be that he was saying, ani a gever, I was a tough guy, but suffering will break anyone. And now he comes back and he says, tov la gever, ki sa'ol bin orav. It's good for a man that he bear a yoke in his youth. I think what he's trying to say here is that people in their youth, you know, they have their highs and their lows, and they change so quickly. And all you need to do is see a high school boy or girl in 12th grade who, you know, you look at them, you're like, ain't tikva with this person. They go to Israel for the year, they come back, and you're like, huh? Who are you? What happened to you? Right? Because they, and unfortunately, give a few months, and lo and for you'll see a lot of people, they just go back to their older, because youth, people who are so young, they can change so quickly. Good for the gever to be ol binorav, to bear the yoke in his youth, meaning whatever questions you have, whatever you're trying to understand, whatever perhaps theological questions a person has, better you deal with it when you're at your youth. Because when a person is older, they're like, oh, I'm set in my ways. Well, I gotta keep kosher. I gotta buy now two dishes and a Pesach dish, and you know how much that's gonna cost. And then what? I gotta put it in the mikvah. I gotta go there. My back is broken. I can't move. What am I gonna do? It's harder for people when you're young. You have more energy. You're more excited. More questions. And that's why the questions of the youth are so important. The questions of teenagers, of young adults. And Yes, obviously anyone's questions are important, but the questions are there because they're looking to explore, and we're not there to shut them down and say, no, don't question me. This is, everything is about blind faith, blind faith, blind faith. Because eventually, what happens is when they're older, they then act like youth again. They go wild. Unfortunately, you see this a lot with and in the news, it's been coming out a lot of these ex-chassidim who go off the derech, where they go to the other extreme. I mean, it's like mikatze elakatze. Some of these people were married with children. They go, and now they're like tattooing with like earrings. It's like you're a teenager now because you never got to question and to understand what life is like because this is the way you were told your entire life. And so it's important. The questions are important because we need to be able to grapple. Not obviously, we shouldn't put ourselves in situations where we should suffer and be like, I need to suffer once in my life so I can understand what this means. But questions are there that to understand of what our connection is going to be with Hashem. And that's the key that he says here, that it's that gever ol binorav yeshev badad v'yidom ki natal alav pasuk chafchet, that one sit in solitude and be submissive, for he has laid it upon him, right? Because he says ki natal alav yitem ba'afal piu ulai yesh tikva, so let him put in his mouth to the dust, perhaps there's going to be hope. And ki im hoga ki lo yiznach leolam Hashem. Sorry, skip the pasuk. Yiten l'makeo lechi yizba becherpa. So let him offer his cheek to the one who strikes him. Let him be filled with disgrace. What he does now is, unfortunately, goes back a little bit to the return to the first person account of suffering, because it's real life. A person could suffer. They could see the hope within God, but then when they go back home and they go back to sleep that night, they think about all their suffering again, and all of their questions, and everything that happens, and they retreat to their old habits. So as much as a person needs to have that connection and that hope, it needs to be constant and constant, constant. And so Yirmiyahu or Yerushalayim or Bnei Yisrael or a random person who's suffering goes back to that suffering, because it's very hard to just turn around and all of a sudden you're a new person, because he's still living through the destruction. He could have that faith, but as he's walking down the ruins of Yerushalayim the following day, he once again hits his forehead and says, how could all this happen? I can't believe this is all happening again. Oh my gosh, I didn't even realize this also happened and that happened? And you begin to have those questions. Again, this is what he does. He retreats. For he first afflicts and he pities according to his abundant kindness. For he does not torment capriciously nor afflict man. To crush under his feet all the prisoners of the earth. To deny a man justice in the presence of the Most High. To wrong a man in his conflict, the Lord does not approve. Meaning, don't think that it is random. That is all random. Now, so whose decree was ever fulfilled if the Hashem did not ordain it? Ooh. It's not from the mouth of Hashem. Meaning, it's not because God randomly said, good, bad, suffer, good life, suffer, good life, suffer, good life. Adam chai gever al chata'av. Because man sins. There is a cause and effect. You run the red light, the cop pulls you over. It's not because you're Jewish and you're wearing a kippah and he's an anti-Semite. Okay, that's not why he pulled you over. He pulled you over because you ran the red light. He had no other reason why you got pulled over. He didn't pull you over because you went 80 and he saw the kippah on your head on the New York State Thruway. You were going 80 and he pulled you over and you happened to be Jewish and you shouldn't write a letter to say anti-Semites all over the world. It could be that he might be an anti-Semite, but that's not why he pulled you over. He first clocked you at 80. There's a reason why something is happening to you, and that's because you've done something wrong. And the question then is, how do you then change your ways to make sure that it doesn't happen, or that's not the reason why God causes bad upon you? Now, there's always the Eo, where even if you're good, we don't know why God does something. I mean, a person could, you know, with all the introspection and all the tshuva and fast 40 days, go to the kotel 40 days and 40 nights, give tzedakah to Meir Balanes, and all everything that you could do, all the yeshuot and all everything you could think of that they've done, and life is the same as it was 40 days ago. The way it is now is like 40 days ago. Why? Because sometimes we just don't know. We just don't know for why that happens. But as long as that relationship is there, a person can continue to understand it more and more. Okay, a person has to search and examine their ways and return to Hashem. Let us lift our hearts with our hands to Hashem in heaven. I love this pasuk. Why? Because what did we see the image in the first chapter of Eicha? When Yerushalayim said, there's nobody to give her a hug, right? I've reached out my hands and nobody came to me. What is the Mekonen saying? You're reaching out your hands incorrectly. You're going horizontal. You got to go vertical. You got to reach out to God. God help me. Not man help me. Not other nations help me. Because they're not going to care, perhaps. Because they might laugh at you. They might ridicule you. They might be excited and happy for your suffering. But when you lift your hands up, so God, it's going to be Hashem, who's going to be the one to embrace you. That is what he is saying now. In order to do it, we're going to lift up our hands up straight to Shemayim and not towards other people. We've transgressed and we've rebelled, and you have not forgiven. You have enveloped yourself in anger and pursued us. Oh, here we come back again. But God, you are enveloped in anger. You have killed without any mercy. You wrapped yourself in a cloud that prayer cannot pierce. Even if I wanted to pray, you wouldn't be able to listen. Made us disgusting and dirty, and the dirt and the refuse among the nations. The same imagery. What do? They open their mouths wide at us. Pachad v'fachad hayalanu hashet v'ashaver. We're scared. Panic. We're with our ruins. Palge mayim tereit eini ashevel patami. My eyes runs with streams of water at the destruction of my people. Eini nigra velo nidme. My eyes will flow and they will not cease. Me'ein who forgot without relief. Ad yashkif yireh Hashem mishamayim. Until Hashem looks down, takes notice from heaven, and then what happens? And then as a result of that, when he looks down and he sees us from heaven, my eyes have brought me grief over all the daughters of my city. God, I'm looking up, and then only I'm hoping, if I'm crying and you look down, then maybe. He's going back and forth. God, no mercy, you're angry. But if I cry and God sees me, then maybe. But God, now it's full force. At first he began saying, he's hitting me, he's beating me, he's beating me. Oh wait, you know what? Maybe the only way to get help is if I connect to God. So now, God, I connect to you. You know what I realize? Wow, now that I've connected to you, maybe it's all my fault. Maybe it's about sin. But God, you've done this, but if I do this, God will help me. But then God, you're like this, but if I do this, God will help me. He's going back and forth, because he realizes, I need answers. I have questions, I need answers. I know the answers, but I don't know what to do with the answers. His anxiety, the hysteria, all because that's what's happening there now. People are running away. There's destruction. For the shiur that I gave this past Shabbat, I discussed how Yitzayin B'Tammuz, the fast of that day, is only for the second Beit HaMikdash. And the first Beit HaMikdash, the walls were breached on the 9th of Tammuz. So the questions that many of the commentaries have is like, why aren't we fasting on the 9th of Tammuz too? And what does this mean? How do we understand it? And so one of the answers that were given was that, you know what happened? It actually did happen on the 9th of Tammuz. Sorry, it really happened on the 17th of Tammuz. You know why the Navi wrote the 9th of Tammuz? Because people were going crazy. They didn't know what day of the week it was. They didn't know what time it was. They didn't know what day of the month it was. Everyone's running away from their homes. Fires burning. Children being taken away. There's no food. People are hungry. People are laying on the ground, dying of hunger. As Eicha writes and Midrashim, they ate their feces just to find something to eat. You think somebody asked them, like, oh, by the way, what's today's date? What's today's date? Is today the 17th of Tammuz? Oh, really? I thought it was the 15th. It's my child's birthday. I'm trying to figure out the date of when to celebrate the... Nobody has dates then. They weren't thinking about it. They're running away. They're running away. There's no time to think about that. And if you just hear stories of the Holocaust, when you hear a lot of the survivors talk, they say it was around the fall. I think it was this month. Do you know what day of the week it was? I don't know what day of the week, what day of the month, what time it was. I don't know. I'm hiding in the forest for 7 months. You think I know what? And this is exactly what was going on. There is hysteria, and he's going back and forth. On the one hand, I know I have to do tshuva. But on the other hand, God, this is so horrible, and I'm so angry. Look at what I see. But on the other hand, I remember as a child that my family always said tefillah and daven, maybe Hashem will listen to you. I'm going back and forth. I don't know what to do, and he's going crazy. The Mikoneh is going crazy, and he continues, and he says, Karati shimcha, pasuk nunvav. Karati shimcha Hashem, I called out your name, Hashem, from the depths of the pit. Koli shemati, you heard my voice. I know you heard my voice. Al talemos nechal lechavati leshavati. I know you heard my voice, but don't shut your ear to my tefillot and my cries. I know you hear me. Don't turn your back to me. Karafta biyom ekraeka, you drew near the day that I call you. Amata atia, but you said, fear not. Don't worry, I'll take care of everything. Rafta Hashem rivei nafshi ga'alta chayayin. Because God, you've championed my cause. You redeemed my life. I know, I've seen the good. Before I said there's no good. But I didn't really mean it. I've seen good in my life. Ha'iti Hashem avati shafta mishpati. You've seen Hashem the injustices I suffer. So judge my cause. Ha'ita konik matam ko machshavotam li. And you've seen all their vengeance and all their designs against me. What's he doing now at the end of the chapter? How does he reconcile his differences with God? What does he say to God? God, okay, I might have sinned. God, you're strong. You know what? Instead of focusing on me, focus on the enemies, the people who destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, forget about me. We both could agree that the Babylonians who destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, you know, what about them? Don't forget them. They also have something to do here. So focus on them. All right, me, forget it. But them, they deserve punishment too. Shamata chepatam Hashem kol machshavotam alai. You have heard their insults, Hashem. All their designs against me. You know what they were saying during the times of the destruction. Siftei kamay vehegonam alai. Kol hayom, the speech of my enemies and the thoughts are against me all day long. That's all they care about. The Jew, the Jew, the Jew. Throw the Jew over the boat. Throw him out. Spit at him. That's all they care about. Shivtam vikimatam habita ani. Manginatam, look at their sitting down and their rising. Look at this, the way they live their life. I am butt of their taunts. I am the reason. I am the cause. What they talk about on their table is not the rabbi's speech. They're talking about on the table of the Jew and the Jew and the Jew. And God, you know this. Take care of them. Tashiv lehem gumul Hashem kemaseh yadeh. Take revenge. Titen lahem miginat lev talatcha lahem. Give them a broken heart. May your curse be upon them. Pursue them in anger and destroy them from under the heavens, Hashem. He moves to the end of a parak as a tefillah. God, I know it's you. Okay, I get it. It's all my fault. I know it's my fault. Okay, maybe there's nothing I can do about it now. But let's not forget the third party here. Okay, it's me, it's you, and it's them. So at least take care of them, because that's going to give me solace. That's going to give me comfort. That's going to allow me to know at least that you haven't abandoned us. Okay, so maybe me, I don't know why you're doing this to me, but as a people, if you're going to take revenge, then I know as a people, we're still connected. Then I know you haven't given up as a nation. And that's the comfort that he's trying to find, that maybe as a Jewish people and as a nation, that if God will allow us to come back, and we'll bring the revenge upon them, then we know that we're still connected to Hashem fully. Then we know that God has not forgotten us and has given up on us. And we're going to see that as we might continue a little bit with this idea in the fourth chapter, that things get really all different up in the fifth chapter, as again the source of that, of the keynote. Okay, Bezrat Hashem, next we go back to Tuesday evening. For anyone who would like the previous recordings, anyone who knows, it's on YU Torah, and I hope to put this evening's shiur.